I'm Beth, your host at the True Crime B&B Podcast. I started this podcast with my daughter Bailey, creating a format where one of us would tell a rough story about a case, and the other would end every episode with an inspiring story focused on strength and survival. We wanted to remember victims and celebrate survivors. Now that I'm solo, some episodes are collaborations with podcaster friends who bring a case to share, and we continue the downer and upper format that Bailey and I created. Sometimes I release what I call Just 1B episodes, where it's just me telling true crime case stories that you've never heard before. I focus on cases that didn't get much publicity because those people still deserve to be remembered. I will never glamorize the criminals. This place is for the victims and the survivors. So come join me at the True Crime B&B. You can find me wherever you're listening to this right now.
The subject of this series is a rapist and murderer that hunted the streets of West Philadelphia in the mid-80s. With a borderline genius IQ and a myriad of mental issues, some fabricated, he would, among other things, become a loan shark, con the government, take advantage of countless mentally challenged people, start a church, beat his mail order bride, and have every one of his children taken from him by either the state or the mother, possibly leading him to make the absolutely insane plan to start populating his, what can only be called, at-home baby farm. With kidnapping, sexual assault, beatings, electrocution, dog food sandwiches, pits, murder, and cannibalism, this fiend would end up being, along with two other high-profile sociopaths, the inspiration for one of film and literature's most infamous villains, Jane Gumb, otherwise known as Buffalo Bill. Today we give you episode 1 of Gary M. Heidnik. I'm Kevin Young.
A flirt with a heart of harp. Don Hurden.
Tuck it back. And this is Torture. Oh, fuck. I apologize, everybody. I'm getting over the flu. I think it turned into an upper respiratory infection, so I'm going to try and mute my coughs as much as possible like this. Yeah, that one. Took me a couple tries to get through that intro. Which you can only hear if you have cult leader tier or higher on our Patreon.
And I promise I will not go through the entire episode speaking in Simoleon. Deg, deg.
Appreciate it. Oh, Dan, how are you doing, man?
Good. Good, good. Can't complain too much. We are also a little bit under the weather in this house. So yeah. You're not the only one. Oh, look at that nipple right there. Look at that. I just realized I was right next to my nose.
Right by your face. Yeah.
But poor Alison had a rough weekend there now. She had a hen party and then she has gotten sick as a result. So
now, of mixing. You were messaging me on Facebook Messenger, and you told me about it. Explain to everybody, because I don't know if anybody over here knows what a hen party is. That's kind of a weird term over here. I've never heard of it.
It's the same
party.
It's a bachelor party. Bachelorette party is what it is. Okay. We call it the hen party. And why it's called a hen, I don't know. I know why a bachelor party, we have a stag party here.
Yeah, and stag party I had heard of.
Yeah. And the reason, the whole thing behind that was that back in the day, they used to go hunting a stag. Was the
sure
right, and that's where it came from. Now, unless back in the day they went hunting hens, Fucking no.
It's possibility.
Yeah. But that's what it is, a bachelorette party. That's
okay,
what it is.
Okay, okay. So I figured a hen party, and it's gotta just be like I figured it was a women's retreat or something, a hen party, because, you know, a bunch of hens.
Technically it is, I suppose. Mean,
so. I just figured that's what it was, that you were getting screwed into doing shit for them for it.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm going to Google it now.
Okay, you go. Google it so we all know exactly what the fuck you're talking about. As far as stag party goes, yeah, stag party is a pretty common term over here.
Yeah, I always thought it was just always bachelor party.
Yeah, well, you can call it that too. The stag party is pretty much just any time it's an all male party, but that usually goes along with the bachelor party. But that can be associated with any type of all male party. But anyway, while you look that up, we've got a lot to get to with this one. Got quite a bit to cover. I could have made it into 3 episodes. I only made it into 2, so they're gonna be a little bit longer rather than, you know, super short. But before that, we got a message on our Patreon from our cult leader Nevin. For all of you that remember from the last episode, I have, and actually just before we started recording the main part of the episode, I heard that fucking cardinal banging on my goddamn window again. So as far as that goes, Nevin says, "Hey, I'm in Ohio, and the cardinal is our state bird. I can attest they are known for being insanely aggressive and not too bright, much like all the people that wear the red hats in the state." No, I agree. I live in the central part of Illinois.
The irony, cardinal, red.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, goes full circle, people.
For a long time, cardinals have been the bane of my existence. They see their reflection and attack. I use window tint in my bedroom so they can really see themselves. I am well familiar with that tapping. LOL. I've never had... Thank you for the message, Nevin. I've never had a problem with cardinals tapping on my window. That's one of the reasons I had no idea what the fuck was going on. We've had cardinals in our backyard through our big sliding glass door that we could look at for my entire life. And windows, and I've never seen a cardinal just aggressively, not even tap on the window, dive bomb the goddamn window to try to get in. I've never.
I was gonna say, yeah, Kevin thinking somebody's breaking in. It turns out it's just a big dumb stupid bird.
It's just like, a bird. It's just a 4-ounce bird trying to get into my fucking house for no goddamn reason.
I found the hen party.
All right.
Hendu or whatever. So the name itself comes from the word hinny or henny, which meant honey, right? So it's nothing to do with the birds.
The bird.
But it originated, believe it or not, in America in the late 19th century. But the word association with the bachelorette party was only started to be used since the 60s over in like the UK and here. But the whole hen party thing over in America was people of middle and upper class when they'd meet in each other's homes and have their cups of tea and their biscuits and play cards and all that stuff. So basically anybody who watches the Gilded Age, let's say, you'll know all about that, and they're all meeting up the whole time. They're hen parties when the women all meet up. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
Now you learn something new,
you know,
every day.
I mean, you come to this podcast to learn something new, but that's not exactly... But you learn something new on top of what you're going to learn new.
Well, look, a bunch of women sitting in a room talking shit and drinking tea and playing cards. That's some form of torture, I'm sure.
Yeah. Could be.
Misogynistic.
These stairs in the camera. Fuck. Also, I'd like to thank Beth from True Crime B&B for the shout-out on her episode last week. I was surprised to see that Synanon was brought up on her episode, and she shouted us out to go listen
to that. Sinando.
Sinando. Sinando! An old Chuck.
Sinado, yeah.
It can be pronounced either way, I'm sure. Sinado!
Everybody was Sinado fighting.
Surely not everyone was Sinado fighting. And before we get into it, aside our main sources for this series, we have 2 books, which are main, you know, our main sources. There's obviously Murderpedia. various articles online, but the two main sources are Cellar of Horror, The Story of Gary Heidnik by Ken Englund, and Cellar Girl by Josefina Rivera. Now, I gotta tell you, they're both pretty well-written books. Cellar of Horror is probably the better written of the two. And he's an investigative journalist. He's been doing, he wrote true crime books for forever before he died a few years back. And Cellar Girl obviously had a ghost writer. You'll meet Josefina Rivera later. The information, the crux of it, like the main bulk of the information itself is fairly the same between the two. What the difference is between these books is in the details, what time things happen, when exactly things happen. Everything that happens does happen. Like everything I can tell you, nothing was made up. It's just order of operation and who exactly it happened to at what point in time. So I kind of had to take both of them and try to figure out exactly which one I thought was more true and go off of what other articles I could find that leaned in. Josefina Rivera does change her story for a few things to maybe make herself not look as much of a villain as some people thought she might have been. I'm going to come off right now and tell you, I do not think Josefina Rivera was a villain in this. I think she was, well, you'll find out, but I don't blame her for anything that happened. I think she was doing exactly what she needed to do, but there are some people out there that think she was, because she does change her story a couple times over the years if you go back and look at past interviews. But to that to say, if you read something after listening to this and it's a little different than what you're reading from what you heard on here, that's because I'm going off two different sources. And I look up and Dan's licking the nipple of Buffalo Bill.
Been doing it for a while.
That's why. Well, when I talk, when I'm rambling, I don't look at the camera. I kind of look down and get my thoughts collected. I look up and Dan's just, this is why you need to get the Patreon so you can see the video. Oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
I would say I'm not proud of myself, but I am.
Dan, have you ever heard of Gary Heidnik?
No, I've heard of Buffalo Bill, obviously. But
obviously, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't even know that old Bill was based on or influenced by something real, if you get me.
He was actually influenced by three different people, which I will get at.
John Bon Jovi.
Next, he does look a lot like John Bon Jovi in that picture. Well, I will get more into that at the end of next episode. But yes, he was influenced. Well, not in by the writer was influenced by three psychopaths that led him to create James Gum.
Speaking of psychopaths that like to wear other people's skin. Did you see that the house from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is now a restaurant?
I did not.
Yeah, it's the house that I can't remember the family's name. So no changes a couple of times, but in the original house from the original film is now a restaurant.
It's got to be a themed restaurant.
I can't remember, but it's a very nice looking establishment, to be fair.
Or did they go in there and turn it into like a fucking Applebee's or something? I mean, it's got to be a Texas Chainsaw Massacre theme. Otherwise, what the hooks. Fuck?
Don't know.
Fuck it. Yeah.
I don't think I'd want to be ordering like a leather face omelet or anything.
Oh, you know? I so would. I'd go in there and order the most disgusting sounding thing and just cross my fingers that it's not what it is. Fuck. All right, well, let's get into it, because I said we got a bunch of shit to cover, and I like to go deep diving into this stuff. So Gary Michael Heidnik was the firstborn son to Michael and Ellen Heidnik, November 2nd, 1943, in the Cleveland suburb of Eastlake, Ohio. Michael was a tool and die maker, and Ellen was a, quote, not unattractive woman of Creole descent. The beautician. About a year and a half later, Ellen gave birth to Gary's younger brother, Terry. Yes, they were Gary and Terry, which is just the... Don't do that to your children.
These wasn't Terry and Jerry.
It's true. My parents, up until I was born, so I'm Kevin, but my three brothers that my mom and dad had before me are Brian, Brad, Brandon. And they decided to go with Kevin for the last one because my mom was sick and tired of going, Brad, you, that one.
The one with the brown hair.
Because then my brother turns around and he names his kids Madison, Mackenzie, Macy, and Marley. It's like, what is wrong with you, man? Break it up.
Oh my God.
Anyway, yeah, they lived in a...
We know you're Kevin, by the way. You didn't need to tell us that you're Kevin. If you're listening to this, you know already that he is
if
Kevin.
If you missed the beginning of the episode, my name is Kevin.
Somebody hits that thing on Spotify too many times.
Yeah, it's just, I don't need to know what they're talking about. Yeah. Just get me to his name.
I'm Kevin.
That's all I needed to know. Then they turn the episode off and they're good. They lived in a middle-class home in a middle-class subdivision, and they were all miserable. Gary and Terry fought constantly with their dad for most of their lives until later on they would completely lose contact with him. Every time I say Gary and Terry, I want to say Terry and Sherry, like from The Simpsons. Yeah. Sherry and Terry. They got along with their mother almost as well. And by the time Gary was two, the couple had called it quits. Ellen had moved out. In her divorce petition, Ellen accused Michael of, quote, gross neglect of duty, and Michael claimed Ellen was a wild woman and a boozer. So, because I said duty.
Yeah. Gross neglect of duty.
The boys went to live. He never shits! Yeah. I want a divorce because this man never shits! Again, low-hanging fruit, people. We go for it every time. The boys went to live with Ellen and her multiple husbands. She got married a few times until Gary started school. Then they moved back in with Michael and a new stepmother that they got along with almost as well as they did with their father. Both boys would say that Michael was a ferocious disciplinarian. When Gary wet his bed, his father would make him hang the soiled sheets out his second-story bedroom window for the world to see. Gary also claimed that when Michael was really angry, he would also hang Gary out of the window, the second-story bedroom window, by his ankles for the world to see.
That's where I'm going wrong with my parenting.
I've tried. My wife refuses to let me.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like, what are you doing to my children?
I got some good strong rope. I got some duct tape. I got a window. And I got a child.
He's 18. You can't do that. I disagree, but okay. I can. I won't because you won't let me, but I can. I have the ability. I don't have the permission.
Shut up, Sooty.
No.
Stupid cat.
Once Michael even painted bullseyes on the asses of their pants before sending them off to school, which is just kind of funny, honestly. I mean, yeah. If you're, you know. I guess it depends on the type of school you go to, of who's going to take advantage of that.
That's like taking the whole kick me thing to an extreme.
Yeah. Michael claims none of this happened and they grew up in an average household. He's like, they're full of shit. Of course, they both said the same things about Michael, so it's his word against theirs and Ellen's. Hi, kitten.
Dan's got. He hasn't seen me all day, as usual.
Oh, yeah. If Dan was ever to get keel-hauled as a pirate, he'd have a cat on his shoulder instead of a parrot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gar.
Troubles for Gary didn't end at the home, however. According to Terry, Gary was picked on fairly routinely at school because of his, quote, football head.
Hey, Arnold. Yeah.
Hence the Hey Arnold background. I think next week I'll have Stewie from Family Guy. Yeah. It was the result of falling out of a tree at an early age on the crown of his head, Terry also claimed that after this fall, Gary's personality changed. Now, this is something that we see in sociopaths and psychopaths, people with mental instability and people who go on to, you know, do horrible things to others, wetting the bed and head injury early in life.
I just had a mental image of football head, but it's the other way. So it's
So it's like Phineas from Phineas and Ferb. It's the other the other way. What if it's a football head but it's up and down?
Oh yeah, oh Jesus.
Yeah. Or like sideways. Or diagonally. Now it should be stated that it should be stated that Terry also had mental instability later on in life. He attempted suicide a few times. It was hospitalized in mental hospitals himself. So it also could have been genetic. You know, it could have just ran in the family. Now, other than this, the boys did have an average childhood. They did average boy stuff. Other than getting beaten all the time and made fun of and all that shit. Yeah, it's pretty average. Boy Scouts, summer jobs, dating girls. But what Gary was really interested in was business and joining the military. So by ninth grade, Michael scraped up enough money to send Gary to Staunton Military Academy in Virginia. He stayed for 2 years, where he scored exceptionally fine marks and had no disciplinary problems. This was also the time where he first saw a shrink. Now, we don't really know why. The only information given was that he wasn't given any medication. But he starts seeing a therapist at a fairly early age, about ninth grade.
Hey, at the end, do that.
Yeah, and that's fine. I've seen a counselor. I've never went to therapy, but I saw a counselor for a little while. I think if you need to see a therapist.
I do see one, so there you go.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Every couple of weeks, yeah.
Perfectly fine. Do it.
Yeah.
Talk to somebody. It's you can't good. Be judgmental. At the end, but see, and again, it's the Midwestern in me. They'd be like, so what's going on? I'd be like, nothing. I'm all right. But tell me about what's how you're feeling.
Yeah, good.
I'm fine. How are you? Tell me about yourself. What's going on with you? Well, when would you like to reschedule? Oh, whenever you got a chance, whenever you have free time, I'm fine. I can come in.
Feels like you walk around Costco right now with all these questions.
That's how I would be. Tell me what's wrong. I don't want to bug you. How much do I owe you? Okay. Now, at the end of his junior year, he decided to drop out and move back to Ohio. Over the next couple of months, he went to two separate high schools before he saying, fuck it, dropping out, and on November 29th, 1961, officially joining the Army. Gary was, and this is another thing you see in a lot of these fucking psychopaths, is they go join the military. They, you know, they usually, though, they're like radio engineers or something, because the military can see that there's something not quite right. I want to get a gun, deep down in the jungle and shoot me some Charlie. And it's like, you're gonna operate a radio. you're not gonna see any active duty, because you're gonna end up killing more people than you need to. The wrong people.
It'd be like your man in the which movie is it now? Based in the Vietnam War. Full Metal Jacket.
Wayne Full Manson Metal Jacket.
Come get some.
Yeah. Now, Gary was, by all accounts, a good soldier. He didn't get into trouble. He had not many friends, but was able to help a few of his fellow Army men out and make a nice buck for himself in the process. In January of 62, after he finished boot camp and was just barely 18, Gary asked to be sent to military police school. Pretty common among killers and rapists to want to be in a position of power. Ed Kemper schmoozed with cops as often as possible. Joe DiAngelo, the Golden State Killer, was a cop in the late 70s. Jared Schaefer, the Butcher of Blind Creek, was a patrolman in the 70s. Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, both want to be politicians and tried to elevate their standings in society. Gacy was more successful than Bundy. So Gary wanting to be an MP isn't that surprising. However, because he was only 18, he was told no. And was shipped off.
If you watch any TV series like that's like a procedural drama thing that has anything to do with murdering or anything like that whatsoever, I can guarantee you there's going to be an episode based around a military school at some stage.
Oh, yeah.
There's always an episode based around the military school.
Yeah.
Like, always.
Yeah. Sure.
It makes sense.
I know Law and Order did a few of them like that. And they also did where you know, people would become cops just so they could get away with shit. And,
yeah. Like, yeah. The series The Killing had an entire season dedicated to it one stage. You know, yeah. There's a couple of other shows that we watched that have had it. So I was like, any of that sort of shit always seems to have it.
Yeah. Well, he was shipped off to Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, to begin training as a medic. When he graduated from training, he did so with stamps of excellent in both conduct and efficiency. Because you see, Gary was incredibly intelligent. An IQ, depending on what article or book you read, of anywhere between the lower end being 130, which is seen as advanced intelligence and puts him in the 95th percentile with other American men at the time, and at the high end, 148, which pushes him past genius level. 140 is the cutoff for genius, and 148 puts him pretty deep into it. That's where Dan sits.
I'm 149.
Fuck you, Gary.
Oh, damn it, I've missed a decimal point there. That's what it is.
But anyways, with the new training and the new job in the Army, Gary started making more money, and he used that money to make even more. He had always had a keen mind for business and how money worked. As a kid, he would read the Wall Street Journal and follow stocks and financial news. So when the opportunity arose to make a buck off his fellow soldiers, he took it. He'd save up as much of his pay as he could and start making loans to the others in the barracks, charging them interest. And everything would have worked out fine until he was shipped out. May of 1962, Gary was sent to the 46th Army Surgical Hospital in Landshut, West Germany, as an orderly. But they made him leave so abruptly that he didn't have time to call in his almost $5,000 in loans. So he lost it all. Just for context, that would be a little over $51,000 today.
Hate that.
To just, but other than that, I mean, that's a lot of, I would be distraught if I lost 51 grand of my money.
I'd be distraught if I lost five fucking euro of my money.
Of course, if I was the guys that he loaned money to when he left, I'd be like, oh, fucking sweet. I'll have to pay that shit back. Free money!
Money, money, money.
Now, other than this obvious setback, life in Germany wasn't that bad. He took his high school equivalency test and scored a 96%, 28 points above the standard. He seemed to be doing fine in his duties at work. But then, August 25th, he went to the doctor for dizzy spells, headaches, and blurred vision in his right eye. Nausea, vomiting, and an irregular tic that caused him to involuntarily jerk his head horizontally. He was diagnosed with gastroenteritis, a short-term illness triggered by an infection and inflammation of the digestive system, and possible schizophrenia, which was probably wrong. He was prescribed Stelazine, an extremely strong tranquilizer. 2 months later, on October 25th, he was sent back to the States, to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania Military Hospital, where he complained of seeing things moving. January 23rd of 1963, an army board decided that someone suffering from these kind of mental illnesses had no place in the army and was subsequently honorably discharged despite Gary's protests. He would be seen as 100% mentally disabled and would be given 100% of his service pension.
But I think he needs a good old bout of Chinese water torture. He's going all
kooky. Yeah, he's got to get that. Got to get that blood out of the brain.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly watch what he needs. Watch, you know, because it's Oriental and evil.
Watch NASCAR with his sister. All that blood will just drain straight.
If he's watching, if he's watching NASCAR with his sister, he won't be watching the NASCAR.
Watching his sister.
He'd be watching his sister. Yeah.
So. Now, he decided to stay in the area and settle down in Philly. He graduated as a licensed practical nurse and enrolled in the University of Pennsylvania, earning credits in chemistry, composition, anthropology, history, sociology, biology, commercial law, and marketing. Unfortunately, his mental battles had gotten worse, and he was unable to keep a job. Within a year of leaving the Army, he would attempt suicide twice, once by ingesting 1,500 milligrams of fluorazine, and when that didn't work, he tried good old rat poison. He again admitted into the hospital and was seen by doctors that claimed he had, quote, undetermined psychosis and was suffering from acute depression and schizophrenia. Again, I don't feel that schizophrenia is the right diagnosis, but whatever. Gary also started this new thing where, for seemingly no reason, he would just go mute for weeks or months at a time, communicating with notes or sign language, or he would just sit and stare at you.
So he reverted to being like a six-year-old.
Pretty much.
I'm not talking to you. Starting now.
Holds his breath. He's breathing through his nose, but he puffs his cheeks out like he's holding his breath. He went AWOL from there and was picked up by the police a few days later after driving a motorcycle with a busted headlight at night, and he was taken back to the hospital. Released 2 weeks later, a couple nights after that, Halloween Eve of 1966, he crashed his motorcycle head-on into the front of a truck, trying to kill himself yet again, but he was only slightly injured. So I don't think he was driving it too fast because he went head-on into a truck. Back to the hospital. This was a pattern that would continue for years. December of 1968, he hit Terry over the head with a wood plane. Terry was admitted to the hospital, was recuperating when Gary walked in. Terry asked him, "What would you have done if you'd killed me?" And Gary said, quote,
"That's a weird thing for Gary to say. What'd you do if you kill me?"
quote, "I would have put your body in the bathtub and poured acid over it to dissolve the bones. Then I would have been careful while mixing the acid, though, because I wouldn't want to damage the drain pipes. I'd leave you there soaked for 2 or 3 days. And if there are any big bones left, I'd saw them up and put them in the trash compactor. Then I'd distribute them around the neighborhood in various trash cans." This is his brother he's talking to.
That's oddly specific.
Terry would go on to say that he had nightmares for the rest of his life of his brother chasing him with a wood plane. I bet you fucking did.
He's got his inspiration from the old Irish mother with the wooden spoon. See what it is.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, during this time, Gary wasn't just bouncing from mental hospital to mental hospital. He had started investing his money and had gotten his own place. Not long after leaving the army, Gary was able to convince an unnamed married black woman to leave her husband and come live with him. They ended up having a baby girl together. Then the woman took the baby and moved back in with her husband. Not long after that, during one of his stints in a mental hospital, he met another woman named Dorothy. This is going to be a pattern you see with Gary. Most of the women, with very few exceptions, had the same two characteristics about them. One, they were black. Gary almost exclusively dated and fucked black women. Some would contribute this to the last two men his mother was married to, both being black, and her telling him that he was part black. Even when he was older, he would fill out forms at the hospital, and he would always put his ethnicity down as mixed. He hated the word colored. He didn't look black at all. He's about a pasty white man. He's just a pasty white.
Could help someone with the FBI you're looking for him. So we're looking for a mixed race black guy here, and Gary's just walking down the road.
Who are you looking for?
Like the whitest motherfucker in the world.
Hey, Gary. That's not me. He's walked up.
Look, maybe he just likes the melanin.
And that's fine. If that's what you're in, there's nothing. Black women are beautiful. There's absolutely nothing wrong with like.
Stephen Lynch said, skin that she's dwelling in must contain melanin.
That's right.
Yeah.
We won't get into some of the other lyrics of that song because it's a little offensive. But yes.
It's a brilliant song.
It's a great song. I love it. And Stephen Lynch is great. The D&D song. And, yeah. It's all just great. Now, the second trait was that they were almost always mentally retarded. And not like just barely, but severely mentally challenged. They could all feed and clothe themselves, but most of them couldn't read, write, count money, or even use a phone. It added to his authoritarian personality. That's something you'll see with Gary, is he's got to be in charge. He needs to be the one that you're looking to for whatever. He has to be the authority in whatever situation he's in. So even though he's practically a genius, he picks the lowest of the low was when it comes to intelligence to surround himself with, even his friends, just to make him put himself
smarter.
That much higher.
Yeah.
Now, Dorothy, Gary's a fucking prick. You'll find that out.
He should have hung around with my best friend. He would have been like super fucking smart with that guy. I was like, Gary, meet Paul. Paul, Gary. Gary's like, ascending to godhood. Fuck this guy.
Pretty much. Can you imagine him and Carla together? Because they were both, Jesus fucking Christ. Now, Dorothy was both black and mentally challenged. About 12 years Gary's senior, Dorothy had spent about 14 years living in institutions by the time Gary had met her, being abused and neglected to the point where she had no teeth. They were together for almost a decade. The whole time, Gary treated her like absolute dog shit. By May 30th, 1970, Ellen, his mother, riddled with bone cancer, drank the contents of a bottle of mercuric chloride.
Worcestershire tire sauce.
Worcestershire. AKA mercury salt, and died. Now, this led Gary back to the mental hospital, complaining about depression over her death. The next year, 1971, he started wearing a black leather jacket in the middle of summer, walked into a VA hospital, stinking to high heaven, and refused to take the damn thing off. And once again, refused to talk. Started rolling one pant leg up and wrote a note claiming it meant he didn't want to be bothered. And he also started to salute people for seemingly no reason. Like anybody can see, he'd be like, whoop. And from what I read, he just absolutely reeked of body odor. Nice. It's the middle of summer in Pennsylvania. It's not a good time to be wearing a leather jacket as you just walk around.
I was going to say that, but do you think he's like 1990s teenager? Listen to Guns N' Roses. Walking around Fonz. The place,
He's the fucking Fonz. except instead of A, he's like
He's digging a doofus.
he's doofy yeah, from Scary doofy. Movie.
So he's doofy, not doofy. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Ha, I managed spring to do it before year. He even saw me. When you weren't looking at this
The spring of that year, one morning, Gary decided to, as he claims, drive down the street for a coffee and a donut. He got in his car and started west. Oh, and again, according to him, he didn't stop until he hit the Pacific Ocean. Yes, he drove on a whim, it seems, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to Malibu, California.
What the fuck does he think he is? Forrest Gump? Like,
yeah. Dan, I know you're a smart guy and you understand how extremely large this damn country is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, stupid. I know most of our American and Canadian listeners understand the sheer scope of how far that is. But for all of our European listeners out there that still don't quite have a grasp on the magnitude of this fucking country, that's 2,757 miles. Or, for those that don't use the imperial system, 4,437 kilometers. If you don't stop...
it's the same distance that your parents used to walk to school in every morning, uphill both ways.
Uphill both ways in the snow.
Yeah, so go ask your parents, they'll tell you exactly how far.
That's how far my dad used to have to walk to change the channel for my grandpa on his old black and white TV and adjust the rabbit ears.
You said he went to California, yeah?
Yeah, from Philly.
I'm going to...
Go ahead. If you don't stop to eat, sleep, shit, or piss, you're looking at about a 43-hour drive. That's nonstop.
Why did it give me California restaurant in Iraq or some shit?
We see you're in Ireland. Is this what you want?
Yeah.
It is closer to you than California here.
Looking at it, it's just absolutely insane.
Yeah. And that's only if you know where you're going. If you know the way. Because back then, we're not talking about a time where you have fucking... Google Maps or Apple Maps or even MapQuest for those if you want to go back, 20 years or so. This is Atlas and road maps that you pick up at gas stations to find which way you're going. Point your car towards where the sun's setting and just drive.
Hey, can you imagine if you were to drive from Madrid in Spain, here's for the European people, from Madrid in Spain to Moscow or Moscow. It's the entire width of Europe and then some.
Yeah. For a little more context, what I have is that's just California, Philly to Malibu is just a little bit further than it would be Ireland to Egypt as the crow flies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at it as crow flies here at the moment, and it's like Dublin to Moscow as well is another...
Yeah, go.
I'm going to drive to Moscow. I'll report back in. We'll finish this episode.
I'm going to go get a donut and a coffee.
Yeah,
I'll be back in a few weeks. I'm going to Moscow.
I'm going to come back with one of those funny hats.
Which, if you're going for a donut and a coffee, why would you go to Malibu? I mean, you're right there in Philly. The food there for like donuts and coffee is going to be way better than it's going to be. If you go to Malibu, it's going to be some type of health fucking
food. Not back in the 60s though, sure. I was about 70s here now. Would we? Are we in the 70s now?
Beginning of 71.
Yeah, well, 71. There you go. Yeah,
spring of 71. Yeah.
Is that where In-N-Out Burger is?
In-N-Out Burger is in LA. There's a couple in California. I believe they're putting one in New York and another one somewhere in the Midwest, but I'm not sure where. I've never had In-N-Out Burger. I hear the people who I know that have gone to California and come back who have eaten there had said it's okay. It's not worth
it. Is it kind of like Dunkin' Donuts? Like, you have a massive hype it gets, and then you have it, and it's just like, yeah, okay.
It's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Five Guys.
I like Five Guys. Shake Shack is fucking amazing. Uh-huh. I don't know if you ever had Shake Shack. Shake Shack is, I would put that up there on the top. But anyway. Now, again, according to Gary, I have to keep saying that because this is all conjecture on what he tells people. So take it with a grain of salt. But he was in Malibu. He got out of the car and gazed at the sunset. And it's interesting that True Crime B&B would mention us on their Synanon episode this past week. So we'll put a link up to that episode about Frank and Annette Carlson that Beth did a fantastic job on in our show notes. And if you haven't yet listened to our Synanon series, well, Dan, what do I need to do?
Go back and listen. Like and subscribe.
That's right.
Yeah. Hit that bell icon, people.
Hit the thumbs up, hit the bell icon, get the notification. But what does old Chuck end up doing with Synanon to make as much money as possible? What's he turned Synanon into? Goes from a cult to a...
Hold on a minute. I remember this.
Let's see how much Dan paid it. What does Synanon turn into?
Aside from a cult?
Cult the entire time.
It was like a mob type thing or some shit, wasn't it?
He turned it into a church.
A church, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. The same thing as a mob, yeah. Come on.
It's the same thing.
Private police force and all that stuff.
Yeah, military operation.
Yeah, and they didn't eat sugar.
No, well, they were allowed to have a Snickers like once a week until they broke into the shit. Yeah, until Chuck decided, you know what, sugar's not bad for you. Go ahead and eat as much as you want. Well, Gary claims that he was visited by the Almighty himself, and Dan, your God and mine, told him to get his butt back to Philly and start a new church, one that would care for the mentally and physically handicapped. So, a few months later, October 12th, 1971, Gary's application was approved to incorporate the United Church of the Ministers of God. Let's just take as many religious words and put them all in one, so, and that'll be the church.
When God said to take care of, did he mean to take care of?
Well, that might be the way. For those of you listening and aren't watching, Dan did the finger in the hole in the hand thing. He might do a little. He'll do a little bit of that. Yeah. He'll do a lot. Actually, he does a lot of it.
Say
he does
sex.
He does a lot of it, yes. Founding members would include his brother Terry, Dorothy, and a handful of other friends that happened to be around. They typed up a 5-page constitution setting the rules of the church, including a 5-member board of directors, a bishop who would rule for life and would have full control and responsibility for church funds and how they were raised and used. So, of course, Gary M. Heidnik would now be known as Bishop Gary M. Heidnik.
God.
Because, of course, he put himself in charge of all the fucking money forever.
The first rule of a church club is you don't talk about church club.
When the bishop wasn't in a mental hospital, he would regularly hold services wherever he just happened to be living at the time. He had a friend named Tony Brown that the book talks about quite a bit, even saying that he may have been in on some of Gary's later crimes, but he's not convicted of anything and the victims never really name him, so I don't see any real reason to give him so much attention. Not to say he wasn't a piece of shit because he was screwing around with mentally challenged women too. But anyway, this Tony Brown would jump in the biggest vehicle they had and drive around picking up mentally and physically challenged people and bring them to church. They would sing some songs, Gary would preach a small sermon, and then they'd go to McDonald's. Maybe get a pizza. I don't know.
Big Mac spaghetti. Or Big Mac carbonara.
Big Mac carbonara.
Oh, yeah.
Chicken nugget ravioli or something.
Chicken nugget cacciatore.
chicken nugget cacciatore. And then maybe they'd go to a theme park. A few years later, in 1975, he'd start a church account with Merrill Lynch for $1,500. That would eventually grow to around $545,000. Gary, he invests wisely for the most part. Not every investment paid off, but for the most part, Gary was a pretty good investor. And he
fair play to you, Gary.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Now, it should be stated
it's a
that...
shame he didn't invest in himself. Like the Feel Better podcast.
The Feel Better podcast. Now, it should be stated that a few of his significant others that came through the house that really had no reason at all to stand up for him for any reason had said that he never saw him take a dime from anyone. Passing the collection plate around was not something his church did.
They passed something else around.
he passed the sausage. any black mentally challenged women in here, just pass them around, please.
They had a different entrance for a different reason. I was just thinking I guarantee you that motherfucker, he didn't get anywhere near Malibu. He was just off his head and he ended up in like Rehoboth or something. He's just like an hour, a couple of hours
he's
down the
probably,
road.
Oh, he's probably in Chicago looking at fucking Lake Michigan or some bullshit. And yeah. Be like, man, it's a lot colder in California.
Yeah, I was
going to
say it's really cold in Malibu. Yeah. He saw one person wearing flip-flops. He's like, I'm in Malibu.
Well, in spring of 1971, people in Chicago would be wearing flip-flops because it doesn't matter if it's 50 degrees outside. That's too hot to be wearing long pants and a jacket.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, even in Chicago. Like...
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Now, it was around this time that Dorothy went missing. If you were to ask the people around him, Gary was frantic and worried. He thought that she had wandered off somewhere and got lost, or worse. Yeah, I know, you're probably thinking, he killed her. But after a few years, the police finally found her alive and well, but worse mentally than she had ever been. She went missing for years. Like, the authorities didn't know where she was or what she was doing. So she finally popped up out of nowhere.
She's probably just living her life. Like, no clue.
I believe she had some type of mental break, and she kind of spiraled downwards mentally, and she's just living on the street, I'm guessing. Now, one of the ways the church was able to earn and spend money was through investments, including real estate. Well, sometime between 1971 and 1976, no idea really when, Gary bought a dilapidated three-story house on Cedar Avenue in West Philadelphia near the University of Pennsylvania. Yes, I see the technical difficulty. He rented an apartment to a man named Robert Rogers. In early 1976, Gary and Rogers' girlfriend got into a heated argument about God knows what. So Gary decided to go down to the basement of the building and turn off all the electricity. Now, Rogers got home from work, heard about what happened, and went down to turn the power back on. Door was locked, so he decided to go through a basement window. Once inside, he saw Gary sitting on a baby mattress with a rifle. Gary noticed him, put down the rifle, and picked up a pistol. Quote, I got you and I'm going to kill you and say you're a burglar. Then he aimed at Roger's face and fired. Luckily, Rogers turned his head just in time and only got a graze on his cheek. Quote, I kind of talked him out of shooting me a second time. We went outside, and when the police came, I snatched the gun and I struck him. So I was like, I grabbed the Glock and I punched him in the face.
It's like that escalated really fucking quickly.
Yeah. It's just that. It's that Anchorman meme. Wow, that got out of hand.
That's how you stab a man with a trident.
You might want to lay low for a while, change your name, move out of town.
One of the problems with growing a beard is proper beard care. Going on a website or even to a brick and mortar store and seeing dozens of different options, whether it be oils, washes, balms, lotions, razors, butters, or just a massive amount of different companies all trying to sell you virtually the same product with a different logo, it can be difficult and overwhelming.
And even worse, See, I already fucked it up. And even worse so if you're trying to buy beard products for someone else. Well, thebeardstruggle.com has made that process infinitely easier with their beard kits and bundles.
Anything from a simple oil kit that gives you day tonic and night elixir,
to the complete beard care bundle that gives you the day and night oils, beard shampoo, beard conditioner, beard balm, and the Viking Sea Mineral Beard Mask.
The beard growth bundle that comes with the Boxster Growth Accelerator and the Derma Roller.
To Cracky Shave Kit that gives you everything you need to keep your beard short and trimmed up.
To the mother of all beard kits, the Apex Bundle 2.0 that comes with 15 different products including the heated beard brush and straightener.
And if you're still just not sure what bundle to get, you can take their beard routine quiz and the Beard Struggle will tell you what the best beard care routine and products are for your specific beard type and price range.
The Beard Struggle takes the confusion out of what you get, what to get. Anyway, the Beard Struggle takes the... to reading the ad struggle. The Beard Struggle takes the confusion out of what to get for your beard or that special beard wearer in your life.
And the best part is since it's a bundle, you save money.
And with our exclusive discount code, TORTURE19, that's TORTURE19, you'll save even more, 19% at checkout. And with their 90-day money-back guarantee, you'll have absolutely nothing to worry about.
And since they never test on animals, you can feel good supporting an ethical company that also produces a quality product.
TheBeardStruggle.com. Do what's right for your beard. Do what's right for your face. Sort your fucking beard out.
For some reason, probably racial, the charges were dismissed a week later. Shot a man point blank in the face. And they're like, you know what? We're going to let you go home.
He's mixed race. Just better let him go.
Yeah, that could be. The black party, I think, should stay in prison. But that white party, I think he's going to be all right. So you get on out of here.
Just quickly, only half beat him.
Beat him, but, you know, take it easy. An administrator for the University of Pennsylvania bought the house from Gary a little while later, mostly to get him out of the neighborhood. Somebody's got to do something about this. Like, I got the money. I'll buy the fucking house just to move him out. Now, when they started cleaning up the place, they found not only a bunch of trash and porn, but in the basement, a hole about 2 foot square, chopped through the concrete, and the dirt under scooped out to create a pit large enough to hold an adult.
Put solution in the basket.
This is what they call foreshadowing. If you were writing this story, and it's probably something people should have looked at a little more carefully as far as he goes for his other criminal acts. Now, after leaving the Cedar Avenue building, Gary took up with Anjanette Davidson, who had an apartment at 2331 North 58th Street. Now, Anjanette, again, a mentally challenged black woman, was unable to read or write, and had an IQ of only 49. 70 is the cutoff for being mentally challenged. Like, that 60 to 70 area, that's like Peter Griffin. I'm only slightly mentally challenged. She was at 49. So... he had almost 100 points of IQ on her.
You could see, yeah, the whole thing of him really, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
What an asshole.
Yeah. Anjanette ended up getting pregnant, and Gary, who had a certificate as an LPN, insisted on treating her at home and refused to allow her to receive outside medical attention. Again, he has to be in charge. Now, a month before the baby was due, her older sister, who does not have any mental challenge that we know of, with a police escort, came and took her away. And it was good that they did, because an exam showed that Anjanette had developed a large fibroid tumor that would have prevented normal delivery. They also found out that due to Gary's strict eating regimen, Anjanette, at almost 9 months pregnant, had only gained 5 pounds.
Jesus. What?
The baby was...
I could baby put was, that on today if I wanted to.
I can go in that kitchen right now. Yeah. And I just bought Girl Scout cookies. Yeah. Do not tempt me.
We'll have a dairy milk downstairs. The, oh, yeah, baby.
I have some Thin Mints in the pantry that are calling my name. The baby girl was born by C-section March 22nd, 1978, and was taken almost immediately by the state and put in foster care, to the ire and dismay of Gary. Gary really wanted a family with a bunch of kids, but every time he has one, it went away. Now, this will be a bigger issue for him and others later. But kind of go back to that 5 pounds. This is how much, this is how little food he let her eat. She had gained 5 pounds through the pregnancy from what she originally weighed, but the baby was like 7.5 pounds. So she herself had technically lost weight while pregnant.
Jesus.
She had lost at least 2.5 pounds because the baby was 7.5. Well, then in placenta and all that other stuff. So, yeah. I mean, you're looking at probably losing 5 to 10 pounds at least.
How the fuck do you do that? Like, I don't know.
How do you have a 7 pound baby if you're not allowed to eat?
That is how I, if I want to lose some weight, what you're saying is I should get pregnant.
Just pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, God almighty.
My ex-wife ate a shit ton of food, gained a shit ton of weight, and my first couple babies were only like 5 pounds. How does she not eat anything and have a 7 pound fucking baby? Doesn't make any sense.
Some babies are just born thick. You know,
yeah, I suppose so. Like,
if she had have eaten, how big would that baby have been?
Yeah, no fuck. A 12 pounder.
It's like a big bag of flour just being fucked onto the table.
About a month and a half later, Gary and Jeanette drove to Salinas Grove Center, an institute for the mentally retarded near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to visit Anjanette's other older sister, Alberta. Alberta was even worse off mentally than Anjanette, with an IQ of only 30 and the mental capacity of a 5-year-old. She was 34 and had been institutionalized since she was 14. The two signed her out with a day pass, promising to have her back the next morning at the latest. Next morning came, no Alberta. Over a week later, still no Alberta. So the center went looking. They drove over to Gary's apartment and asked where she was. Gary told them that he had put her on a bus back to Harrisburg. They didn't believe him and asked if they could search the apartment. He let them, and they found nothing. The next day, still no Alberta. So they decided maybe go back and research the apartment, except this time...
to check the bathtub. Police,
with the police escort. What's that goo with all those bones in your bathtub? That's my brother.
You did a good job of those drains there.
These drains are working great, I tell you. I mean, I did not take any care of mixing this acid at all. This is going straight down. I am impressed. Now, the next day, still no Uber, so they went back with the police escort, but this time, they didn't just search the apartment, they searched the entire building. And wouldn't you know it, there, in an unused storage room in the basement, they found a scared, cowering Alberta Davidson. Now, once back at the center, doctors discovered a tear in the vestibule of her vagina, indicating recent intercourse, traces of sperm in her mouth, and gonorrhea in her throat. Jeez.
How did that get there?
I mean, I knew I misplaced that somewhere.
I also think, I know it's the correct term, but it's the word vestibule.
It's like you walk into a bus station into the vestibule. Yeah, exactly. Oh, this is what it's like. Yeah. Now, three weeks later, Gary was arrested and charged with kidnapping, rape, false imprisonment, unlawful restraint, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, interfering with the custody of a committed person, and recklessly endangering another person. At the trial a few months later, Gary told the court that after calling the center and getting approval to keep Alberta longer, the center called back and said that she needed to return immediately. Alberta didn't want to go back, so Gary hit her, but denied ever having sex with her. He even passed a VD test. He was negative for gonorrhea.
I was going to say, did he test a negative because he gave it all to her? You see, that's what it was. You know, so he didn't have it no more. If I have six apples and I give you six apples, I can no longer test positive for apples. Okay.
They had so much sex, he gave her all the gonorrhea.
Of it. Yeah. And he countersued because she stole it from him.
I lost all my gonorrhea when he gave it to her. Of course, under cross-examination, he was forced to admit that he had access to antibiotics that could have taken care of the disease before the testing. He also had to admit that he had been in treatment for schizophrenia. So,
maybe,
yeah. Oh boy, I hear somebody's home. Probably the girl.
Probably the cardinal.
The car just got a key, opened up the door, and came in. It's like, fuck it, I'm coming. He
walks in, drops his suitcase, drops his briefcase to the ground.
I'm here, fucker.
He walks in, punches you in the face.
Give me some blast to bang.
Fuck you, asshole.
Just walks up to a window, starts headbanging and does the fucking thing. Now, he had waived a jury trial, so it was up to Judge Charles P. Marachi to decide his fate. Unfortunately, the rape, kidnapping, false imprisonment, and involuntary deviant sexual intercourse charges had to be dropped because they couldn't be prosecuted without Alberta's testimony, and the judge had deemed her too mentally challenged to take the stand. So they could only go off of the misdemeanors of reckless endangering another person, interfering with the custody of a committed person, and unlawful restraint. He gave him 3 to 7 years in a state penitentiary. However, Gary would never do an actual day of prison time. He would spend the next 4 years, 2 months, and 14 days bouncing from state hospital to state hospital.
The story of Gary Gonorrhea. Thanks for tuning in, folks.
Gary Gonorrhea. He pulled his mute bullshit again, rolling up one pant leg, writing a note that said, "The devil shoved a cookie down my throat." When the doctor examined his throat and said he didn't see a cookie or anything else, Gary wrote another note saying, quote, "Pray for eyes," which is kind of good. Oh, you don't see that cookie? Pray to God that you can see shit again.
I got antibiotics that'll stop you, stop me from developing a cookie in my throat.
2.5 years he did this, until one day a friend of his showed up and they just started having a conversation like nothing was wrong. And a guard at this specific state hospital, who had never heard Gary speak before, was completely convinced that he could not talk, started screaming, "Hey, he's talking." And Gary responded with, quote, "Yeah, must be a miracle." And then just went back to talking. He's just like, "Yeah, sure. Must be a miracle."
Go to Bishop Gary. He's walking around healing everybody.
Give him the old Bishop Gary. That's what I'm calling him every night from now on. I play chess. I move Gary.
Yeah.
April 12th, 1983, Gary was free, but under state supervision for the next 3 years. The first thing he did was go searching for Anjanette, but she, just like Dorothy, had gone missing. Some investigators still believe to this day that he killed her and buried her in an unmarked grave. As far as we know, to the writing of the book, which the book I believe was written in like 93, she had still not been found.
See, what happened was he buried her in what he thought was Malibu, but it turned out it was just like Connecticut or some shit. Like,
it was actually Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Anyway, he moved into a house at 3520 North Marshall Street in a mostly abandoned and dilapidated neighborhood in Philadelphia, inhabited mostly by drug addicts and drug dealers.
So like Philadelphia.
West Philadelphia, not born and raised, Gary's house being the one beacon of civilization left on the street, it would be the last house Gary Heidnik would ever live in. In this house, Gary would have girl after girl come through, sometimes two or three at a time. One of these was a woman named Sandra Lindsay, a friend he met at the Elwin Institute. They help children and adults with autism, intellectual and developmental disabilities, and related behavioral health changes. Which name?
Sandra Lindsay. Like, it's like two Sandra first Lindsay. Names. Like, it's like calling yourself like David Brad
Ricky Bobby.
You know, or yeah, Bobby. I was going to say David Barry, but that is actually Barry.
Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
She was black and mentally challenged, just his thing. But it was just a rotating door of women coming in and out of
the house. How many black mentally challenged people are there in Philadelphia?
Philly's a big place. And he lived in the area where
all the black mentally challenged people lived.
Pretty much. Pretty much, because there are sections of major metropolitan cities, especially here in the United States, that certain people, like, oh, black people go here, white people go here.
Oh, I've watched The Wire, don't worry, I know what you're saying.
Okay, it's Baltimore, but it's close enough.
Yeah, but, it's the same in most major cities.
Drug addicts, drug dealers, the mentally challenged who can't afford a nice place to live, you have to move to this certain area. That's kind of where everybody kind of ends up. If you have a mental disability, that's where you are, unless you have a rich family that can take care of you. If you're on your own, then you got to go where the, cheap places are. It was just a rotating door of women coming in and out of this home, along with Tony Brown, again, who lived there for a short time. The place was what one sex worker called a zoo, which is a good way to put it, I suppose. Gary, still in 1983, decided maybe it was time to settle down. And for that, he decided to look east. And he went to a matrimonial bureau and told them to find him a Oriental virgin. His words, not mine. He wanted an... All right? I'm not the one saying that.
I wanted
that.
Something strange he and exotic.
And dangerous. He wanted
a dangerous and exotic. Yeah.
A few weeks later, he received a letter from a Filipina named Betty Disto. Betty, the youngest of six children, was a beautiful woman in her early 20s with raven hair and dark eyes. They started writing back and forth, sending pictures to one another. Gary sent her a younger picture, telling her he was 36, when in reality he was now in his early 40s. Telling her he was the leader of a church he had started, which seemed weird to her. It should. It's a weird thing. Then after
that almost... remind me to not invite you to my church then when I start up.
Oh, you're only Dan's? No. I'll go.
That's a different
you're
thing.
You're only
Dan's? Don't worry, everybody. That's a different thing. I'll get
it. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
You got to pay for that. That's a different thing.
No, I'm going to have to start my own church. I would have started a church of bacon, but somebody already did that.
Yeah, I think those are already around.
Yeah.
With many denominations and infighting. Then after almost 2 years of talking back and forth, he proposed. Her mother begged her not to go. She thought he might be some type of witch, crazy man, which she's not too far off. Which is on September 29th, 1985, Betty boarded a plane from Manila to Tokyo to New York to Philadelphia. When they finally met, Betty thought he was much older than he claimed, and quote, he looked like Dracula. So red flag there, get back on the plane and go home. If you ever fly literally halfway across the world to meet the man of your dreams and he looks like Dracula, maybe turn around and go the other way.
Unless it's Gary Oldman, in which case he is the man of my dreams. Like, yes. Hello, Gary Oldman.
Marry or me. Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen. Now, when they got to the house, she was surprised to find a black woman sleeping in what was supposed to be their marital bed. Gary told her she was just a tenant. October 3rd, they drove to the courthouse and were married. And it only took a couple of weeks before she would walk in on him with three black women in their bed. When she told him to buy her a ticket home, he told her no, that it was normal in America. It's not. Just so you know.
For all the mail order brides out there.
It's not normal. For everybody out there, it's like, I want to go to America and marry a man. If you walk in on him with three black women in your bed, it's not okay. It's not a normal thing. We're not supposed to do that.
So that's the demographic of listeners we're aiming at now. The sort of people who would obviously do. Does your IQ have a decimal point in it? I found the right show, people.
When she said she couldn't stand that, he told her, well, you're going to have to because I'm the boss. And over the course of the next few months, Gary became more mentally and physically abusive. Marriage was in no way slowing down the amount of women that came and went through the home. Betty had said that the entire time she was there, not a day went by while there wasn't another woman in the house.
That Gary is wearing his leather jacket still throughout all of this.
Oh, I imagine
the entire time.
He hasn't. He's got that on. He just pulls his pants down a little bit. He's got the one leg rolled all the way up. He doesn't want anybody talking to him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's saluting as he does it.
Yep.
The whole thing.
Now with his tin can penis. And they can just go covered in gonorrhea.
They're like, the women are like, talk dirty to me. And he's like,
yeah.
cookie in my throat. Yeah. He's just writing down cookie in my throat. When she would complain to him, he would yell and punch her in the arms and legs, force her to stand in the corner for up to 12 hours at a time, refuse her food, force her to watch him have sex with other women, and then make her cook them all food when they were done. January 12th.
Sorry, he's here having like an orgy.
You stand there and you watch me have sex with this lady, and then I want an omelet.
She's walking her throwing sandwiches at them mid session.
Like when you toss rice after a wedding, she's just there tossing sesame seeds on them as they're doing it. January 12th, 1986, he blew up and slapped her in the face, punched her arms and legs, and then vaginally and anally raped her, telling her, quote, if you run away, I'll kill you. 4 days later, under the guise of going shopping, she made a run for it.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you said he blew up, I was hoping he literally blew up.
On the 27th, the DA's office charged Gary with spousal rape, involuntary deviant sexual intercourse, simple assault, and indecent assault. He was picked up 2 days later, the very day his parole expired on the Alberta Davidson incident. You just look forward to that day so much, and then you fuck it up by being an asshole. Now, unfortunately, Betty failed to appear at the March hearing, and without her testimony, the judge had no choice but to dismiss the charges. You sit there and you go, why didn't you go? But it's got to be difficult to sit in a room, even in a courtroom, with the man who has been treating you that way, who's done these horrible things to you, being able to, you know, knowing he's staring at you into your soul. That's got to be terrifying. So
surely they could do like a closed reopening where he's not necessarily there in instances like that. And as well as that, she was more likely going to get a flight home from it.
It's a possibility.
So she wouldn't, you know.
But I understand why you'd be terrified to show up. She actually never divorces him. She refuses to divorce him for, never gives a reason why. It's probably a religious thing or a cultural thing that it's just not something you do in the Philippines. But yeah, she never divorces
him. Stand by your man.
Well, I guess. Betty ended up having Gary's baby boy on September 15th of that year, named Jesse John Heidnick. So Gary finally had the son he always wanted, but he would never get to meet him.
Good.
This realization, fuck you, Gary. Family after family being taken away from him, may have been the last straw, even though it was pretty much always his fault. His children were taken from him. He decided, but with these people, it's always somebody else's fault. It's never his fault. It's always somebody else doing something. I'd be a perfect father. You don't know. He decided that he was going to get his family and he was going to get his gaggle of children one way or another.
You're going to find
November,
you.
November 26th, 1986, the night before Thanksgiving, Josefina Rivera had just left her apartment for the evening around 9 p.m. to try to make a little money to get her through the holidays. Josefina was a 25-year-old, half Puerto Rican, half black drug addict and sex worker. She was not mentally challenged. She was out on the corner of 3rd and Girard for about 10 minutes before a tan Cadillac Coupe de Ville pulled up. The window rolled down and Gary Heidnick asked if she would like to go back to his place. Temperature was dropping quickly and rain was moving in, so against her better judgment, she got in. She told him her name was Nicole, an alias she used on the streets, and that she had three kids at home she needed to get back to, so this couldn't take long. This is a half a lie. She does have three kids, but they are not waiting for her at home. One of them is in the hospital. The other two are in the care of other people. So after a quick stop at McDonald's for a coffee or a pizza, you know, whatever, they headed to Gary's house. Once at North Marshall Street, they went inside. They went to the bedroom. He gave her the money. She took off clothes, got in bed. He did the same. They had sex. Boom. End of transaction.
like every good sex worker.
Like it should be. You go in, you have sex, and that's boom, you're done. That's it. Thank you. Here's your money.
Bam, bam.
Go your separate ways. Yeah.
Literally, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Only when Nicole went to put on her clothes, Gary came up behind her, wrapped his arm around her throat, and squeezed. He kept squeezing until she almost passed out. He let her go and quickly handcuffed her wrist behind her back, threatening to choke her again if she fought him. Naked and handcuffed, he led her down to the basement. He moved her to a bare, lumpy mattress in the corner. She complained about blurry vision in her right eye. Gary picked up a piece of lumber and threatened to beat her with it if she didn't shut up. Then he took muffler clamps that you would use to hold up a vehicle's exhaust and fit them around both of her ankles, tightening the nuts over the bolts after wetting them down with crazy glue, then drying it with a hairdryer.
You weren't the only nuts then, getting tight around then, at that time.
Then he connected them to a chain, which he padlocked to a sewer pipe. Told her to sit down on the mattress. She did. He stretched out next to her, put his head on her lap, and fell asleep.
Sorry, how many ways is he after, like, tying her to different things? And imagine that, yeah, then he took a length of rope and tied that to a radiator, and then he got a clothesline and he tied that around her toe and put that through the sewerage pipe.
He made it as difficult as possible.
She's like this, like, you're fucking tying every different which way.
Now, Nicole, from what that's what we will call her from now on, while she's in the basement, eventually fell asleep as well. When she woke up the next day, Gary was gone. She looked around the room and saw a washer dryer, a small window that was boarded up, a chest style freezer, a pool table, and a spot in the floor where the concrete had been broken up and the dirt taken out of it, forming a small pit smaller than a wash tub. Soon after, Gary came downstairs. Now, that's according mostly to Cellar of Horror. Cellar Girl says that she was immediately put into the pit, but if you look at some of the interviews she did, that's different. So you kind of wonder if maybe the Ghost Rider changed some things to sensationalize it more. I don't think that's necessary, but anyway. Soon, Gary came downstairs with an egg sandwich and a glass of orange juice. She turned it away, worried it might be poisoned, so took it back upstairs. And when he came back down, he had a pickaxe and a shovel and went to work on the pit. He talked as he worked, telling her how he wanted a big family, but something always ruined it. That he had fathered possibly 4 children in his lifetime with 4 different women, and they're all taken from him. He claimed, quote,
common denominator, Gary. Common denominator.
Society owes me a wife and a family. I want to get 10 women and keep them here and get them all pregnant. Then, when they have the babies, I want to raise those children here, too. We'll be one big, happy family. Then he stopped working, orally and vaginally raped her, and went upstairs. Left alone, Nicole started picking at the glue and twisting the nuts on her shackles. And then, all of a sudden, one popped loose. Not all the way, but enough that she was able to slide her left foot out. Chain was long enough to give her about 12 foot of slack to get around the basement, so she went to the window and started prying it open. She grabbed a pull cue and used it as leverage to force the covering back so she could open the window. She boosted herself up, wriggled herself outside. Crawling into the backyard, stretching as far as she could, she began to scream for help. Sadly, this area of Philly was also known as the OK Corral, for a shootout that happened there years earlier. This was a place where it was not uncommon to hear screaming throughout the day. Residents learned to ignore them. So Nicole screamed and screamed until she could barely talk, until Gary heard her. He ran to the backyard, slapped her, not able to push her back through the window. He ran to the basement, grabbed the chain, and like a fish out of water, pulled her back in with one fell swoop.
Jesus.
Yeah, he took her to the pit, crammed her in, and placed the board and heavy bags on top. Now, when I talk about the heavy bags he puts on top of the board, he's taking all the dirt from the pit, putting them in these large plastic bags.
Yeah.
The plastic bags with the dirt is what he's using to weigh down the boards. There will be a lot more plastic bags in a while.
Okay. I wonder if it's a body parts or pit.
Knees to chin, head forced down. The hole wasn't quite deep enough for her. She screamed that she couldn't breathe and that she needed air. So he moved the boards, pulled her out by her hair, and started beating her with the shovel handle. Jesus. When she surrendered, he stuffed her back into the pit, covered it back up, grabbed a radio, put on a rock station, and turned the volume all the way up, and left her there for the next 27 hours.
Years.
Oh. And that, it probably felt like that. And that is where we will pick up with more kidnappings and rapes, electrocutions, infighting between the victims, dog food sandwiches, cannibalism, and the downfall of the bishop. On the second and final episode of Gary M. Heidnik.
I didn't realize we're doing this as a two-parter, because I sit there for a while and it's kind of like, my God, there's so much going on with this guy.
Oh, yeah,
he can't just do it something to one person and then this season. Game over, guys.
No, there's a lot more to come. A lot more horrible, horrible things that he's going to do to people.
I thought it's
not gonna be fun.
Cool. So this is the light episode. Yeah.
This was the light episode. Yes, it was. Getting to know Gary, where he comes from, some of the horrible things he's already done. He's gonna do more, and it's gonna be worse.
And his smoking hot Filipino wife, apparently.
Thank you to our patrons, cult leader Nevin, Jagavani, Loyal Quinn Fowler, and MX Sinister 26. Thank you all so much. If you would like to join our Patreon, go to patreon.com/torturepod. You can get a free week as our cult leader. You can also email us, torturepod@gmail.com, message us on Instagram or Twitter. I don't know how much longer we'll be able to do TikTok over here. The U.S. Senate's trying to get it banned.
Why is that?
And the president said that if they banned it, he'd sign it. They're trying to force China to sell it. Otherwise, they're going to ban it in America because they have it. Some fuckheads in Washington have it in their heads that the Chinese are using it to spy on Americans. It's like,
I'm sorry, Chinese can, if the Chinese wanted to spy in America, they can literally put it into any of the 10 bajillion products that go across.
Exactly. It's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of.
It wouldn't surprise me if they were, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, look, America's already spying on America, so.
Yeah. Everybody is spying on everybody else. It's.
Are you on Facebook? Yes, therefore you are fucked.
Yeah. So, do you have a smartphone? Then you have no privacy.
Yep.
But for now, we still have a TikTok @TorturePod, and I still post stuff on it, and I will continue to do so until the government tells me I'm no longer allowed, and then I'll fight. I'll be a fucking rebel. I'll find a way to download.
Doing
it anyway.
Some funny dances on it or something, like everybody does dances on TikTok, don't they? Yeah. Is that not what it is?
Yep. It is. That's all TikTok is just people dancing.
Cool.
TorturePod fits right in there. It's dancing person, dancing person, dancing person. Hey, this was horrible. You want to hear about people died? Yeah. Dancing person, dancing person, dancing person. Go rate and review on Apple. Go to Good Pods, rate and review. Go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/torturepod. Little snippets and excerpts from the show. You can donate on our link tree that's on our socials. Go to buymeacoffee.com/torturepod. Buy us pizza. Get our Patreon, or go to redbubble.com/people/torturepod and buy some of our fantastic merch. I got my torture hat on here. I don't have a shirt on.
I'm not wearing torture stuff today, sadly.
I do have this, though. It says, I don't care what the Bible says.
Nice. Neither do I. I want to actually touch on something to the rate and review thing, because it's something that we already talked about, actually, as well, which is the whole thing of wanting to know the bad side of things that people want.
Yeah.
You know, right? Exactly. So the reason that came to my mind was earlier on, I was actually looking at some of the stuff to do with our analytics and our reviews and stuff. And sure. Two people who have done it so far, thank you, right?
Yes.
Put it this way, if you look us up on Spotify, we're on 3.8 out of 5. So that means there's at least one star on there, right? And there's one star, let's say, on Apple.
Right.
And a couple of, and somewhere else as well, I saw that there was like at least one. So, hell, I don't mind if somebody feels the want to do it. I'd like to know why, though.
Yeah, yeah. If you're gonna have the audacity to completely fuck over our analytics, completely fuck over our rating,
that is not why.
With a 1-star review, at least have the common decency to tell us why. Yeah. If you think we're annoying and the subject matter is horrible and we just don't know what we're doing, that's fine. I'm perfectly fine with that, but fucking tell us.
Yeah.
So we can either A, do something about it, or B, make fun of you. It's one or the other.
Because I've seen some really funny 1-star reviews for things where somebody turned around and they gave a product a 1-star review. And they were like, thing works fine, but delivery was a couple of days late. And it's like, but you're reviewing the fucking product, not the delivery company, you know, and just things like that. So like, you never know if it's something like that. Cool. But, yeah, I'd like to know, because it's good to know. I mean, like, we can't bring that up unless we know.
Yeah, because you're just giving us the 1-star. You're completely fucking us on being found on all these, because the highest rated always get put up first when you're searching for something. So as far as us getting found, giving us a one-star review completely fucks us. Just absolutely fucks us, and that's fine as long as you tell us why you're fucking us. You know,
yeah, Because then maybe we can fix that, and we can turn that one into a two or a three or a four or a five.
Yeah. Or, again, we can just read whatever you write and make fun of you.
Yeah. And just not care about your opinion.
Yeah. Because, honestly, we just do this for
depends fun. On what it is.
We just do this. Yeah, we make a I little
do this
bit of
for
money.
The, I would do this for the yeah. sweet, sweet, sweet paycheck, Kevin.
Yeah, maybe we make a little bit on Patreon. We make a little bit, you know, through ad and Redbubble or whatever. But for the most part, we're just doing this for the fuck of it. So if you're going to be a dick, at least tell us why you're being a dick. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Let us know. Honesty is communication is the key, people. Just let us know. Dan, any words of wisdom? Or was that the word of wisdom for the day?
No, no, it wasn't. I actually saw something there today, which was something that was spotted in Good Old Dublin. Somebody painted on a road. I thought it was pretty cool, and it was also kind of apt, considering, like, you know, I talked to you about the whole thing about potentially changing jobs and all this. Yeah. And like, I'm also looking at, like you said, doing getting back into the car model thing, because looking for another outlet to, because, you know, shit's tough right now. So,
yeah,
life can be hard, people, you know.
Yeah, you need something to do to take your mind off.
Yeah, so, but even at that, even on the greater grand scale of things, the thing is, here it is, here now is, if you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one.
There you go. Now that, of all the words of wisdom we've done, which most of them have just been ridiculous, that is actually a good word of wisdom.
Yeah. Right, hold on a second. I'm sorry, but don't lick the bottom of your shoes was a very good word of wisdom. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
There you go.
All right. That's. Don't you try and bring down my.
If you don't like the fantastic shoe, thing. Find another one.
Yeah.
Make your own shoe and lick it.
I wouldn't even lick new shoes, people. Because the Chinese put things in there to spy on you. If you lick them, you're giving them what they want.
And then you dance on TikTok. You're feeding into to what the Chinese want.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time, ladies and gents, take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. We'll see you.
Dag.